This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
The obsessive killing of Dorothy Stratton. The real-life murder that inspired Twin Peaks. These stories and more are told in the Hollywoodland podcast, where true crime and Tinseltown collide. Follow and listen to Hollywoodland wherever you get your podcasts.
So yesterday we did carry the introductory remarks of new Maryland basketball coach Buzz Williams. And then the Q&A didn't start for another 15 minutes after his introductory remarks, so we didn't carry that. But you said that you cut some of it and you wanted to play some of it. Am I right?
Sorry, I was editing this Van Pelt thing. Say that again.
You said you had some sound to play from the Buzz Williams press conference.
This is not necessarily from the press conference. This is on some of the takes on Buzz Williams. So I got a clip from Juan Dixon that I think you'll enjoy on Buzz Williams.
Oh, okay.
And then this is an old clip from Buzz Williams on Pardon My Take about how he wants his players to think bigger than the NBA that I thought was interesting. It kind of encapsulates just who Buzz is, I think, as a person and a coach. So which one do you want first?
Dixon. I want to hear what Dixon said about it.
All right, so this is Juan.
Juan was there yesterday.
Yes.
Yeah.
I wanted to show support. You know, Colleen, Dr. Pons, the support staff, we got it right. You know, Coach Williams is going to uplift this program, get it back to the level we need on a consistent basis. And I just want to come here along with Coach Williams and former Terps that was here, student athletes, supporters, to come show support for Coach Buzz, to let him know that we're here and we got his back.
Before I get to another real question, how weird is it to say Coach Williams?
Yeah, that's funny. It's funny. And they're very similar in many ways in their coaching styles. Both dress very well. They're both very intense on the sideline, coach with a ton of passion, and they motivate their guys. And their guys play hard and they're tough. So it's ironic, you know, Buzz Williams, Gary Williams, but I'm sure it's going to work out the same way for Coach Buzz.
Juan Dixon, champion, 23 years ago, we were celebrating. Actually, we were celebrating on the night of April 1st, 2002. God, was Dixon a great college basketball player. I mean, for you, you don't remember Juan Dixon, right?
I have a passing memory of Juan Dixon. Not a great one, but I remember Juan Dixon.
Just great, great college scorer. Incredible defender, especially as an off-ball defender. He had that sick sixth sense of sort of anticipation of being a step and a half ahead. And you'd see a ball reversal going from one side to the other and Juan just waiting on that pass. And he'd jump into that passing lane and it was off to the races. Every big shot, although Blake hit a bunch of big shots too, but he was just a great college basketball player who, by the way, scored 35 in a playoff game for the Wizards as a rookie. I think it was as a rookie on those Gill teams with Karan and Antoine. Although maybe he had the 35 on the Larry Hughes team before Karan was a part of it, because he got drafted in the first round by the Wizards in 2002. And then, no, it would have been a couple years later, right, that they played Cleveland and lost in six. He had a game against the Bulls when they beat the Bulls in a six-game series, and then they played the Heat. He had 35 in a playoff game. I think it was against the Bulls, now that I think about it. I think Larry Hughes may have been hurt. Dixon started and had 35. I got to go look that up now. It's going to drive me nuts. You know, in terms of the similarities between Buzz Williams and Gary Williams, I think that It's interesting because I think I talked about this a little bit yesterday, is that Maryland's last three coaches, Gary Williams, Mark Turgeon, and Kevin Willard, are all outstanding defensive coaches. But Gary was an outstanding offensive coach, too. Gary had perfected, you know, the flex offense against man-to-man defense, and Maryland ran it about as well as anybody ran it. And you see guys, you know, that were around Gary, you know, even guys like Bruce Pearl, who, you know, still run it. I mean, there's a lot of flex offense in basketball, period. But Gary also always was trying to score 100 points, 90 points, 80 points. And Maryland was a team that would turn you over with their press and score. They would turn you over in the half court and get out on the break. They would take it off the glass and try to run. And that wasn't the last two coaches necessarily, although this year's team definitely tried to run. Always love hearing from Juan Dixon. He's not coaching anymore, correct? I don't think he's coaching anymore. Pretty sure. He's not coaching anymore. By the way, the game that I was thinking of, here it is. It came in April of 2005. It was game four against the Bulls, and Juan Dixon had 35 points in a playoff game. He had some good play. They played Chicago, beat him in six, and then they got beat by the Heat in four straight. In 2005. But that game four, which gave Washington, evened up the series with the Chicago Bulls, and then game five, that all-time memorable game that Gil hit the shot at the buzzer on the road to win game five. He came off the bench to score 35. He did not start in that game. Looks like he came off the bench 11 of 15 from the floor, 3 of 4 from behind the arc, 10 of 10 from the free throw line, 35 points in 31 minutes off the bench. So that was his moment as a professional basketball player in the NBA in terms of, you know, postseason having a big game. I don't know if that was his all-time career high, but all right. You had another soundbite you wanted to play. Buzz Williams.
Yes, this is Buzz Williams talking with Pardon My Take. I think this was a year or two ago. He was still the coach, I believe, at Texas A&M when he made this. But it's just talking about player goals and thinking bigger than just the NBA.
It's like I tell our players, I do not want to recruit you if when I ask, what is your biggest dream? If you tell me your biggest dream is to make the NBA, I do not want you to come play for us. That is so limited. That is so shallow. I want to make the NBA. I understand how hard it is. I know there's only 450. I know the numbers of it, the math of it, way better than I could articulate. But if that's what you're telling me your dream is, I don't want you to come play with us, because we go about this every day like this is your dream. You are living your dream. And if your dream is just to make it, then you won't make it in how we go about it every day. You not only want to make it. Hey, coach, I want to be a top 50 ever first ballot Hall of Famer and get to my fourth contract. Okay, now let's talk about that. Now let's rewind from there on how, let's break it down. Let's live life backwards. Now, how long are you going to be able to play to get to your fourth contract? You're going to need to play 15 years. Do you know the percentage of guys that play 15 years? Let's start studying this, and now it'll give us a lens on how we're going to get there.
You know, so in watching and I was watching simultaneously and listening because we ran the introductory remarks. He definitely is an effective communicator. Now, you know, there are a lot of reasons, and you'll hear Scott kind of talk about some of the reasons that the coaching stints in the various places he's been in have been short. There is a preacher quality to his communication ability. You know, how will that work in a big market? Because he's in a big market for the first time in his career coaching, College Station, all due respect, Blacksburg. you know, Milwaukee's a bigger market and city, but it's, you know, is Milwaukee even a top 25 market? I don't think so. But what I do kind of sense, and in reading a little bit more about him over the last couple of days, I think he's very bright. I think that that's, you know, I think this guy is bright. I think he's, you know, innately bright, and I think he's intelligent and smart too. But what he just said is, you know, so true. I don't know how he gets that through to young people who think in terms of which school. It's not even important anymore because it's all about the money now. I mean, when was that quote from? You said from what year?
This is from a couple years ago, but it was still in the NIL era of
college
basketball.
But we're now down to kids basically going to the place that's going to pay them the most money, more times than not. That's really what college sports have been reduced to now. As I've mentioned in the last couple of days, it's very transactional. It's very year to year. But I loved what he said. Like, the overall message, I don't know how he gets it through to 17, 18, 19-year-olds. But there's also analogies to, you know, business. It's like, you if your goal is just to arrive and not to then take that opportunity at arriving at a place like the NBA and become a champion, to become the best player, to get to that second contract, etc., that's so limiting. That's why I think the I always feel like these recruiting press conferences that we used to get all the time, the big announcements where they'd have the hats out and they're at their high school, there's just way too much emphasis on we've arrived. No, you haven't. You've just gotten started. Draft night, the celebration. Look, it's a little bit different, especially before college players started to get paid, because you've reached a financial threshold that is life-changing, you know, for any family, really, when you're talking about a first-round NFL pick or a first-round NBA pick, you know, a high draft choice and the kind of guaranteed money. I understand feeling incredibly proud about that moment. But if you look for and you end up finding the people where that's going to feel like the culmination rather than the beginning, it's not the right way to think. It's probably not the right player to have. I totally understand where he's coming from. You know, the business analogy would be when you see companies, you know, on the New York Stock Exchange, and they're going public, and on the day they're going public, you see all of this celebration. Now, in some cases, there's reasons to celebrate because it can be a massive cash-out event. But in many cases, it's just the beginning. You've raised all of this money. Now you got to make it work. And maybe that business analogy is more applicable to a company that is private. You know, I was involved in companies before I got into broadcasting. One company in particular, which I was involved as someone helping to raise capital for that company, and somebody who was trying to generate their first kind of customer revenue stream. And the guy, the CEO of the company, it was a Seattle-based company. They closed on a $10 million private, you know, investment deal. And the guy spent $50,000 on the party to celebrate the closing of the money. And it was at that moment I realized this. I feel sorry for the people that have actually invested now, because that was just such a waste of money. And the celebration was so much about arriving. No, it had just started. They got the money to execute on a business plan to build a business. Things were just getting started. This was in the wild.com days, Denton, of people throwing money at almost any idea that had a .com next to it. 50 grand on a party to celebrate the closing of a deal. The party, by the way, was phenomenal.
I was going to say, you were invited to the party? Like, hopefully you got the invite.
Oh, yeah, I was at the party. It was an incredible party. But I pled, urged him, you know, leading up to that, don't do this. This is not a good look. Yes, there's some celebration, you know, amongst the people, and you can share the excitement, but it's the beginning of something. Now you've got to actually fulfill the promises. Like, when Josh Harris took over the team, there was something about the way he felt and talked about the incredible burden and the pressure of delivering. And it wasn't just for the fans in this town. It was for the 20-plus limited partners that invested money into Josh Harris, the managing partner of this group, to buy the football team at $6 billion plus. And I remember saying that, you know, after listening to him the day after, this is the kind of leader you want. You want somebody to feel that responsibility and the accountability to deliver for the people that just gave you their money to say, go make it work. Now, look, sports teams are different. You know, they're vanity purchases in many cases for a lot of these people. You know, all they're looking for is just to be a part of a big professional sports team. And, you know, I have heard, you know, over the first couple of years, it's like, because it's the largest ownership group in the NFL, excluding the Packers. The Packers are publicly held. Excluding the Packers, it's basically the largest ownership group in the NFL. So it's not like everybody's getting, you know, four suite tickets for every game to sit in the owner's box. There isn't enough room for that. So it's like, what are you really getting? I got one game. It's a preseason game, but I got one game in the box with the owner. I'm kidding. I think they all get at least one in the main box with the owner, and they get seats, you know, elsewhere, and probably very good seats. But it's not like you're getting a return on that investment right now. You know, in fact, you know, when it comes to the investment in sports teams, unless they're paying out dividends, I assume that there is some of that, there's no exit strategy unless the team sells or unless the, you know, the majority owners decide to buy more, you know, of the limited partner stock, or they allow other investors to come in to buy them out. So that's always a possibility with a large group. But the point being is that I remember coming in here or right after the Josh Harris, and I'm like, that guy is a guy that gets it. Like, he has, you know, built all these businesses, incredibly successful, but he feels the responsibility of, you know, taking that money, taking control of the team, and not just celebrating the arrival, but understanding that, you know, this is not the goal. The purchase of the team isn't the goal. It's not what I promised my investors. It's not what I promised the fans in the market. I promised a winner. That's what I have to deliver. I have to deliver a great business and a winner. And not everybody feels that way in that moment. And I think that's kind of what Buzz Williams was getting at. If your goal is just to get to the NBA, I don't want you. Because that doesn't, I mean, look, for a lot of those kids, I understand I'm not knocking the celebration on draft nights, because for so many of those families, for basically any family of almost any economic standing, it is a big night financially. You know, so on some level, they have arrived at a financial, you know, life-changing event. But for it to be truly generationally changing, you got to view that as, I haven't done anything yet. You know, this team just gave me this contract and picked me in this spot because they think I'm going to deliver and play great and we're going to win. And those are the kinds of people I think that you look for and Buzz Williams looked for. No. Friend of mine asking what the entertainment was at this party. My lips are sealed on that.
It wasn't I thought it was just a bunch of ice sculptures. He used 50 large on, you know, maybe some McDonald's and some ice sculptures.
Yeah, well, Andy went out and found the ice sculpture for Angela. Remember how impressed she was with the ice sculpture?
I do remember that.
It was certainly a wild party, that's for sure. And by the way, 50 grand, this is 25 years ago. Kind of, it went a lot much longer way than it would today. All right. We got other things to get to. You're going to hear Scott Van Pelt on the show talk about the hiring of Buzz Williams. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and theteam980.com. So Scott was on my podcast yesterday. It's good stuff, especially, and I'll tell you about it at the end of the clip that I'm going to play for you, about a 20-minute clip of him talking about Buzz Williams and talking about sort of how it came about, etc. I would urge you to listen to the podcast, last 12 minutes of it, where he actually talks about Kevin Willard calling him on Tuesday night. Kevin wasn't happy with the way Scott had described him, me and others had described the exit. You'll hear it if you go listen to it on the podcast. But first, I wanted to play this part of Scott, who knows, look, I've mentioned this before. For whatever reason, I mean, he's been one of my best friends for 35 years. But man, coaches love Scott in college football and college basketball. So he knows a lot of these people, talks to a lot of these people. So I started off by asking him just overall, what do you think Maryland got with Buzz Williams?
I got text after text yesterday, Kevin, from coaches who competed against him, names people know, talking about Buzz. No one's going to outwork this guy. Been friends with him for years. He's quirky. He's different. He's going to win. Like, that's one I just read. Buzz is a different kind of cat. He's you know, his manner of speaking is almost sort of like a pastor, and he's passionate. He pours himself into the work. He's won everywhere he's been, all right? Won at Marquette in the Big East, won at Virginia Tech in the ACC, won at A&M in the SEC. And I think if you're concerned, you say, well, it's kind of it's been a fast burn rate, and he goes to the next place quickly. And I mentioned on SportsCenter last night when I discussed it, I spoke to Terp fans about, like, hey, listen, this guy's won everywhere he's been. You should know that first. And I said, if I could speak to Buzz, I'd say, hey, man, you've had a rep for a guy looking for a new hill to climb when you're still climbing the hill you're on. And I would just invite you to stop climbing and settle down here and, you know, let Terp fans get behind you and climb together. Because he's been a winner, and he comes with really, 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 really solid credentials from all those that compete against him. So, I mean, if he wins, that's all that matters. You know, you talk about winning the press conference, but I don't give a bleep about that. I truly don't. If the guy wins games next January and February, and you go into March on a line somewhere, that's all anyone gives a crap about. So I don't know. I'm rambling at the moment.
Stylistically, is there a coach that you would compare him to?
It's a great question. I mean, I think it's Izzo-y in the fact that they're going to defend and rebound. I think they might have led the nation in offensive rebounds this year. Now, part of that was they didn't shoot well.
Right.
But they rebound the hell out of the ball, and they defend. I mean, it's physical and, you know, defend and board. And so, I mean, I guess, you know, I mean, Izzo's as high a praise, I think, as you can give. This is a guy that wins, you know, the league this year and has been in the Final Four a ton and all the rest. But I think it's along those lines. I don't think fans get fired up about the idea of grinded out 63-58 games. So I hope it's not that. But I also think after the way it ended, where Maryland couldn't get a rebound against Michigan, Colorado State, or Florida, if you told me, all right, well, they're going to board you, they're going to really get after the rebounding portion of the game, I'm like, all right, I'll take that. So I don't know. I think that's the first thought I have.
you know, what's funny is that the game in which they got eliminated, the Michigan game,
they got out-rebounded.
Yeah. They gave up a bunch of offensive rebounds, and we went through that, you know, the
week. Was it 43 to 17? Because that's what it was.
47 to 18, I think, was what it was with us. But, no, it was not that.
Oh, wow.
He essentially, after the game, said, you know, for us to win, we've got to rebound better, and we didn't rebound well enough. I think you nailed it. Grinding, tough defense, but at times offensively challenged. And you know what? We lived through that during at least the first portion of the Turgeon era, you know, with the, you know, exceptions of, you know, the Mello team and certainly the team in 2020. But we had a lot of those teams that won more than they lost. I would ask you, and then I'll answer it, do you care how you win?
No, it'd be fun if winning didn't feel excruciating. I mean, if we're just being honest, right? If you... Like that's what was so fun about what this team this year did was they just made shots, and it's fun to see the ball go in the bucket. Now, if you have one more than the other team, obviously, yay. But if the process of the 40 minutes of game time and 2 hours of real time are just this excruciating exercise, that's not a ton of fun. So I guess I am saying I kind of care. I'd rather win while playing more higher scoring up tempo. But I think that's probably a common refrain. Is that how you feel?
Yeah, I mean, this year was certainly a lot easier than last year. But in some ways, I don't care how they win, and I enjoyed some of the tough, grinded out, you know, teams of, you know, the mid-teens, late teens, early 20s. I mean, the year after 2020, when he had lost all those guys and they went back to the tournament and, you know, beat UConn before losing to Bama, I mean, that was a tough, you know, grinded out team, and they won, and, you know, I felt like it was an overachieving season. So maybe it's more or less, I like it when I feel like they're getting the most out of what they have. But no, I'd rather see shots go in. But one of the reasons I asked you that is, and we haven't even talked a lot about this specifically, the program has become, for the lack of a better description, more bandwagon-y in terms of the support. It's just the nature of how the market's changed. And, you know, you and I both probably think the move to the Big Ten has something to do with that. Not a lot of March success. You know, I wonder, from a business standpoint, what's more important, to have a team going into a season that's perceived to be great so that you can really generate some excitement and fill the arena up and be highly ranked, even if you end up, you know, with a second round exit in March? Or this year, nobody thought we were any good until, you know, they got on a roll after the Big Ten 1-3 start when everybody wanted Willard fired, and it came very late in the season. You know, you'd like to have both, but it's really important, I don't know, from my standpoint, in looking at trying to get people to be more into Maryland basketball, that off seasons into regular seasons look more like they have, you know, when the team was filling up the arena each night. And we haven't had a lot of those seasons recently.
No, I think it needs to be the former more than the latter. I think you need to kind of have, maybe it's an apropos way to put it, you need to have buzz going into the season. And that's going to be hard to do anymore. I mean, look at this year. People didn't know who Jacoby Gillespie was.
Right.
Rodney Rice hadn't played because he'd been injured. Derek Queen was exciting because it was a local guy that stayed home and he was five stars. But that, like, what five? Like, the McDonald's All-American game used to be a thing. It was on last night, and I don't know how much people are invested in that. So a high school guy that comes in with all that, you know, acclaim that only does so much. This season, Kevin, I mean, and I was super vocal about it on social media, on the podcast I do with Steve, just imploring people, get out and support, because you say it's a bandwagon town. I agree, but it's the bandwagon slow to get filled up in College Park. There were a couple of really good nights there. You know, the Michigan State game, most notably, that building felt like a great building, and it was. But I think you need to kind of get people on board ahead of time and sort of start the process of getting the bandwagon filled rather than having it happen mid-season. And, you know, they did lose some games, excruciating, like, close losses, and it prevented them from having maybe even a higher seed than they could have had. But, I mean, as it is, they ended up, like, ranked, like, 11th, I want to say, in the regular season. And,
right.
And it still didn't feel like the building was, you know, as great as it could be. And there's a million reasons for that. You know, there's attrition over time, and it happened to the Commanders, and there's a lot of things. But I think you need to start with it rather than try to build it, because it's hard to get it filled.
Yeah, I think your point's a good one too, because it's really hard to create that buzz when you don't have any clue as to what your team's going to look like, and it changes so much year to year, and it's so
every year,
yeah,
for every team.
Yeah,
I hate it.
I hate it too, you know, but I still think it's possible, but somehow you got to go into these seasons ranked top 10 in the country. You know, the last years where they had sold out arenas before the season started were some of those mellow years in Diamond Stone when they were preseason number 2 or number 3.
Sure.
And, you know, they came back the following year, preseason number 9 or whatever, and you had filled up buildings, even though ultimately you didn't go far enough in March.
Right, that and anymore, even more so now, I guess I should say, like, those preseason rankings are just complete guesses.
True.
I mean, North Carolina was preseason top 10.
Yeah.
They didn't finish the season ranked. And, like, should they have been in, should they have not been in? I don't know. No need to argue it, but they weren't very good. At least they didn't win games. Kansas started the season number 1. They were 7th seed. They didn't win a tournament game. I mean, you're guessing as to, are these guys any good? I mean, sometimes you're going to guess right, like Duke's really highly rated. Well, they're really good. But you just don't know from year to year because there's so much turnover. And, you know, as it is right now, you know, the line last year when Calipari got introduced at Arkansas, and he said, well, I met the players. There are no players because he didn't have a team. And, I mean, Buzz is I guess, in the sort of the same situation now.
I looked at just the last couple of years. It looks like he schedules in the non-conference aggressively. This past year, they played Ohio State. They played Oregon. I mean, they played 3 Big Ten teams. Oh, 4 of them. They played Purdue as well.
Purdue, awesome, yeah.
Yeah, last year they had Houston. They had UVA. They had Ohio State. I mean, I think that can be a big part of getting some early buzz and some early crowds, too, because, you know, go back for us to December, Marquette was actually, you know, a decent crowd.
Yeah, no, that was a good building. It was a Friday night, you know. I mean, you and I, we laugh about it, but it's the reality. I mean, that was like a Friday 8 o'clock game, so it was kind of the sweet spot where you didn't have to deal with
right. The
Beltway at rush hour and all the BS that we, you know, are the realities of living in this area. But yeah, I think scheduling aggressively would be good, and obviously winning is the recipe and always has been.
So why do you think it's been, you know, high burnout, you know, short kind of expiration date on his 3 previous stints?
I think there's an intensity to him, this work ethic, this, you know, relentless sort of drive to try to be excellent. And then again, there's the just eccentricities, and he's a different kind of cat. And you know, I think it is interesting at Virginia Tech. Well, no doubt football is king at A&M, even more so, although they've got dough for days, and you know, they may take a big fat swing at Chris Beard, but then that would just turn into an arms race between them and Ole Miss. But and then obviously at Marquette, you don't have football, so that's a hoop school. But I would be guessing if I said I don't know him well enough. Buzz and I, just transparency, like we've texted back and forth for years. He's a clothes guy. He's always been interested in my whole pocket square tie thing, so we bonded over that many years ago. And And I'm not kidding.
Yeah.
That's a true thing. Like, yeah.
You know, love your pocket squares. Like, they always look sharp.
I've worn them forever.
Yes, you have.
Long before it was a thing, I've always done it. And so I've known him for years, and I've always gotten on with him. But I also know, like, Buzz is one of one. So what were the reasons why you look for a different place? I mean, at A&M, you know, maybe he felt some of the same frustrations there that Kevin did. I'm completely speculating, but perhaps it's that. And, you know, maybe he benefits now from arriving at Maryland on the tail end of what, you know, Kevin was asking for, which was a bit more support. And, you know, ironically, it came after the fact, but I know some folks that kicked some significant contributions into, you know, the NIL fund, so there'll be more for Buzz to spend. But I don't know. I don't know, I guess, is a really long-winded answer as to why that happened. But you would hope, after a guy left after 3 years the way he did, that you know, Buzz could settle in here and make it home and win, and everybody will be like, hooray.
You know, over the years, I've learned from, you know, not only you, but other people about how, as much as the outside world viewed Maryland as a big-time basketball first school and a top 10-ish, top 15-ish job, there were inherent issues for multiple coaches in a row. On, you know, late last week, and I think you and I talked about this, I know we have, I suggested that maybe the, you know, chaos of the last week and a half, 2 weeks, may ironically result in a job for the next guy that's much better than the previous guys, which would be Kevin, Mark, and even Kerry to a certain extent. Do you think that there's truth in that?
I'll start by not answering it, but saying what I hope for, and I really hope so. It has to. This has to be a reckoning for Maryland to ask itself, well, let's see. Mark Turgeon decided in early December, I'm done. And let's face it, you and I know what that was about. It was, he felt like Damon didn't have his back and was going to fire him at the end of the year anyway, and he was done. And that was an AD-related thing. And in this case, you know, Kevin clearly had issues with that and what the perceived shortcomings and support, and it was related to the exact same thing. And so this is an opportunity for Dr. Pines and everyone in College Park to rather than lash out and be angry at what happened, look inward and say, all right, how can we be better? Because I think everyone understands, and if they don't, they need to, that they need to do better. And so this search for an athletic director is imperative to get that right. And you hear a word used a lot anymore when coaches are introduced to the place, and they talk about alignment. And what they're talking about is president, athletic director, fan base, coach, boosters, are we aligned? And it seems that what this most recent episode has brought to the light for the public to consume is that there's a lack of alignment or a perception of everybody kind of guarding their space on the block. And that's, you know, that I think would become pretty exhausting. And so this has to be the time that Maryland's athletic department gets its self-aligned and does a great job finding a great candidate that wants to do all the things that, or use all the resources that are available as a result of being in the Big Ten to make Maryland, you know, great across the board and athletically.
Before I get to my, you know, slight disappointment that we didn't think and swing big, at the same time, this was a really difficult situation with a very short time frame. So
borderline impossible. Borderline impossible, Kevin.
So that goes into my reaction to the hire. I want you to describe the challenge and then to land on a guy with this resume.
Yeah. Okay. Well, the challenge, you have a coach that leaves in the manner in which he does. You have an athletic director who precedes the coach in leaving, which is its own I mean, Damon manages to use the cover of Kevin to sort of sneak out the door and doesn't get any ire or anything. But, like, okay, that was a fun trick. And so you have no athletic director. You have a coach that leaves. You have a this deadline coming about agreements as it relates to spending this NIL money that has been collected, and you need someone on the case because the portal's open, and if you don't have a coach and everyone leaves, you're doomed. And so, I mean, there's only so much I'm comfortable discussing, but I know a lot of people. I know all the agents that matter that have all the coaches that matter. I know a lot of the coaches. I know our president. I know our boosters. I know I'm involved in a sense that I'm trying to just say, listen, here are some people that I believe you should speak to. Here are some people that are open to having conversations. But I'm not in the room, and it's not my job to be in the room. But I'm also conflicted because I care so damn much, and I don't want to just stand back and watch the ride without trying to get the hand on the wheel if it's helpful to direct, not direct it to a hire other than just direct it to a conversation that could find out if it could lead to a hire. Does that make sense?
Yeah, of course. But, you know, I think it makes sense for everybody listening. Yes.
Okay. So, I find myself in this really weird place where it's because of the job I've had for all these years, you know these people. And it's like, I'm not trying to tamper with their lives, but you can listen to the agent. Look, you can clearly see our situation. I realize we don't have an athletic director. There's one coach I have who's a buddy. I say a buddy. Someone I know well. We text throughout the season, and it's like, hey, man, you want a really good job, and we know each other well enough for him to say, coaches like to know who their athletic director is going to be. And I said, yeah, I get that, but I'll sort it out for you. I mean, we're joking, but I'm not. Like, because if he said, yeah, man, Maryland's a great job, which, by the way, he did. He said, of course, it's a wonderful job, but, like, from the outside looking in, there's a certain amount of, like, whoa, that seems a little radioactive, right? There are things about Maryland that make it appealing, but the circumstance at the moment made it really, I think, kind of tricky. So it was an incredibly unusual and challenging thing to try to get right. And, again, I'm not in the room as these conversations are going. I believe Maryland said that they analyzed, like, 30 different candidates. I believe that's what they said. And so I know a lot of names had been provided. I mean, some that I know a lot of our fans are interested in like, for it, just name the names, like a guy like Luke Murray at UConn, who's never coached a game. That would seem to be that's a little bit of a maybe it's a non-starter. But in the same breath, you say, well, everyone's looking for the next Todd Golden, who had all these, sort of advanced ways of looking at offense and did a lot of great things. And 3 years later, he's in the title game, but he had been a head coach. He had been a head coach at San Francisco.
He's in the Final Four. He's not in the title game yet.
Did I say title game? I meant Final Four.
He's the Florida coach, for those that don't know, Todd Golden.
My mistake.
Sorry.
Then you have someone like Tony Skin, another guy who I know well, who I know is passionate about Maryland basketball and coached at Maryland. Did a wonderful job at George Mason. Like, there's a candidate that you can consider. And then, so it's like, there's all these different people that are in the mix. And then you have, and I'll just say this, like, I know Chris Beard, and I understand what happened at Texas, and I also understand that the respect that he has within the coaching community among his peers, they're saying, that guy right there, if you could talk to that guy, you couldn't get a better coach than Chris Beard. And so, that's a swing that I think a lot of Maryland fans, and I would raise my hand and say, I'd love to see you take a swing just at a conversation and just try to vet out what happened there. I mean, where are you now? Take the coaching out of it, but then is this a job that's appealing? I don't even know if you have the money to get down that road as it relates to him, because they've got a lot of money in the SEC. But that conversation between those two parties, I don't believe happened. But you know, they had to put together a list, and it would have been like speed dating, but not speed dating to say, hey, you want to go to Uncle Julio's Thursday. It's, hey, you want to go out and you want to get married on Saturday.
Yeah.
Like, well, literally, that's the situation you're in.
That was Scott from my podcast yesterday. And again, if you want to listen to him describe a phone call that he had with Kevin Willard, it was just the final 12 minutes of my podcast, the Kevin Sheehan Show.com, which you can listen to at the Kevin Sheehan Show.com website. All right. Trevor Sikkema to talk draft next.